Well, it's give and take on both sides. I'm sure Scott will want to add to this, but this is why the intermediate groups, the CERT CCs, for example, exist to provide that conduit between the researcher and the vendor. If that conduit doesn't work, and in many cases it does break down, then it's up to the integrity of the researcher as to whether they want to continue to work with that vendor or to release. Unfortunately, where they cross the line is not just releasing, as was mentioned earlier, the fact that there's a vulnerability, but now here's the accompanying exploit code where we can now take this theory and make it practical. That's clearly crossing the line. That's where we are now irresponsible in terms of disclosure. And certainly, there's no law against it, but this is the ethics of if you're going to be in the line of work for looking for vulnerabilities, if that's what you like doing, there needs to be some type of ethical procedure involved in it. And certainly, you may reach a point where a vendor is not being cooperative, but there are other means you should go through first before releasing the exploit, if even release of the exploit is proper.
Well, on those things that you've brought up, and I think it ties in all together, with the DMCA law, I had heard that there is an exception written into the law for auditors, and I don't know, and I'd like to find clarification, if possible, on that issue. But even like the SNMP vulnerability that came out, there's reports that some of the major vendors knew about the SNMP vulnerabilities 2 years prior to them being exploited. So if we're going to have responsible disclosure, where do we get responsible response? And even though we say we can go to CERT CC, we've heard tonight that it does take them a while until you have so many reports. Where do the folks who are discovering vulnerabilities feel that they're being taken seriously? Unless you're the NSA, does the vendor really listen? So that might be a question to consider. And then look at where you've seen responsible reporting or attempts. And I do believe that you shouldn't release the exploit code. But I do think there has to be another push on the vendor side.
Yeah, so ideally, it would be great if the vendor found all these, fixed them, and kind of went out without telling anyone and auto-updated and everything was fine, right?
That happens all the time.
Right? Yeah, so that probably won't happen.
That's not going to happen.
But the other part of that is, and, you know, there are other efforts pushing to make this happen, is, you know, better default installs so that, you know, the victims who put these OSs on their machine at home aren't so wide open. And there were a lot of configuration issues, and there's been a lot of effort, I know, to tighten these up. But a lot of the things we heard initially were that themselves. I mean, there are services that just should not even be running. You know, at home, do you need SNMP? Probably not. You know, so there are a whole lot of things that just come up on your machine that were there for convenience or maybe made for an enterprise network that you're not going to need elsewhere. Yet a small office brings up a bunch of them. Next thing you know, they're involved in a big DDoS wave, and they don't know why. So, you know, the vendors are working on it.
I'd just like to go back to your comment about the SNMP vulnerabilities being known for 2 years. Quite often, vulnerabilities are co-discovered by more than one researcher. In the case of the recent OpenSSH KBD init vulnerability, that was discovered by more than one person. The first person discovering it about 2 months after the second guy discovered it, who's an ISS employee. I'm not sure in the case of the SNMP stuff, but I mean you could say the same for any vulnerability. You know, when a vulnerability is discovered, for all you know, someone could have discovered it before you, and they could have been exploiting systems covertly around the internet for the last 2 years. Referring back to the comment about Marcus about the wildfire, I think that the wildfire has already happened. If you look at a graph of the amount of vulnerabilities discovered in the last 2 years compared to, you know, 6 years previously, it shot up substantially, and it's becoming harder and harder for researchers to find vulnerabilities. They're finding new types of vulnerability, for example, the unsigned integer issues, Apache OpenSSH. But you'll find that if you speak to researchers, they are having to scrape the barrel as far as finding vulnerabilities goes. Mike, do you want to move on to the next question?
Sure.
We have a few more hands.
Oh, okay.
Someone pass the mic down.
That's relevant. I think, can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Just speak real loud.
Okay. Two questions. For anyone who cares to answer.
Do you see a place in a responsible disclosure, or do you see a place in a ideal future for liability of software vendors when bugs are found in critical infrastructure for allowing bad code to get out? And my second question is, do you see a place in the life cycle of a bug for full disclosure of the vulnerability to the community at large? And at what point do you think full disclosure of the vulnerability could be important for things like independent verification that the patch actually fixed it, independent verification that intrusion detection systems actually detect it, and so forth?
Yeah. there's a time and a place to talk about exploit, about exploit code.
I wasn't actually asking about exploit code. I was okay. The vulnerability details.
Okay.
And
okay,
my question is, what is that time?
Okay. Let's start off by acknowledging that there are at least two different communities with competing interests here. The academic community would like to see as much information about the vulnerability as possible, and they've got a legitimate interest in getting that information. Take, for instance, format string bugs. We're still kind of grappling with what the full scope of that family of vulnerabilities looks like. We're still trying to understand what kind of coding practices are going to be needed to make sure that we don't have those very often. Academic community, the research community has got a legitimate interest in seeing vulnerability data for that purpose. The other community, though, is the community of users, and they've got a legitimate interest in not having their systems hacked. You've got conflict between those two, and you're not going to be able to resolve it. What we're going to have to do is find some kind of we're going to have to find some balance point where we as a community perceive that the predominant interests have shifted from the users initially to the academic community. So to sum it all up, initially, I don't believe there's almost never a need to publicly discuss the specifics of a vulnerability in the initial term after releasing a patch, because at that point you're trying to give customers and users every opportunity to get the patch on and get their systems protected before the attacks come. After a certain point, a lot of people have talked about 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, after a certain point, the interests of the academic community start to predominate. We can assume that any users who are interested in putting the patch on will have done so already, and now we can release the vulnerability information and let the academic community start to use it.
In the case of open source software, we've discussed that script kiddies can't really do much with an advisory, but the people we really need to worry about who are developing exploits can quite easily determine what the specifics of a vulnerability by just looking at the patch file for some source code. So I don't necessarily think that disclosing all vulnerability information at a certain point is such a bad thing. If you look at any patch file, you can see which area of code it's affected, which function. Someone that has the ability to develop an exploit would also have the ability to determine which bug that patch is fixing. So in the case of open source software, I don't think it's such a big issue.
Go ahead. Real quickly, your first part of your question had to do with liability. And should we make software companies liable for issuing buggy code, for example?
Are there any contexts in which we should do that? Are there any particularly egregious cases in which...
You also mentioned critical infrastructures. The government has long had its own code written, of course, for government systems, like the space shuttle, for example. It doesn't run an operating system that you can buy at Best Buy. It's coded by individuals who are very, very meticulous. Each line of code is documented. It's reviewed by many people. It's a very painful and expensive process. But you really do wind up with bug-free code. Now, of course, it takes hundreds of millions of dollars to write, the operating system for the space shuttle versus Windows XP. What did it cost to write Windows XP?
Hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay, but
placing liability on software vendors is certainly an option, but I don't know of any software vendor that in their EULA, the end user license agreement, where they hold anything in there other than buyer beware. Once you install the software, it's your software. They don't maintain configuration control after that point. It's up to you, the user, to configure it properly, to close any openings, to apply the patches, to maintain that piece of software. It would be ideal, certainly, if we could figure out some way of assigning liability, but I think it's a task that's too far and also doesn't make a lot of sense, mainly because the ownership of that code is sort of out of the hands of the developers at that point. However, it's an option that still needs to be discussed and taken up. It's worthy of debate and something that's an interesting thought as we get better at what we're doing with software.
Let me just counter that. I think that the due diligence enters into it somewhere. As long as if they have done something that's egregious, then they ought to be held responsible.
But who decides that and how much testing is enough?
I think I can do that.
You could? Yeah, okay. So your configurations that you put out, I mean, everybody uses those and then they still get hacked, and so are you responsible?
That's a good question.
Nah, I'm kidding.
Can you turn your mic on?
Is the liability issue clear at all? I've seen the analogy made even in the last couple of days about, well, how Ford and Firestone are being held responsible for tire issues. But it seems to me that's not an apt analogy. If the issue was somebody sitting on the side of the road shooting out people's tires, neither Ford nor Firestone would be responsible for that. Maybe the tires could have been made bulletproof. Or maybe there's a structural weakness where a slingshot might be able to take the tire out, but the liability issue is not nearly so clear as it is with many mainstream product liability cases. Would you agree?
I don't think it's going to go to court until somebody gets killed. If there is loss of life and it can be proven that it was a problem with the software that caused that loss of life, then there might be a court case. But if it's monetary losses or inconvenience losses or, you know, a hacked web page because you didn't close a particular, you know, access, that's going to be a hard time holding up in court against the software manufacturer. But that's not to say it certainly could be tried. But take go find a good lawyer. And matter of fact, there's one next door on the trial over there.
Okay. I'm going to jump topics a little bit. And let's discuss new threats as a result of irresponsible disclosure. What threats do you guys see occurring now that weren't occurring before as a result of current practices, and what threats do you see developing in the future?
New threats?
And I'm putting them all on the spot. So.
I don't think there are new threats coming from irresponsible reporting. It's already about as bad as it can be. And we've seen, I can start citing them. We've seen lots and lots of cases where somebody posts exploit code to the web and you immediately see people starting to get hacked. Now, that's unnecessary. That's the cost of irresponsible vulnerability handling. On the other hand, let's hold vendors to account as well. We've also seen cases where vendors have refused to fix vulnerabilities in their software, and the result is that their customers are hacked long after the point where they didn't need to be. I mean, there's responsibility on both sides.
The other part of the thing about exploit codes released and then suddenly there's lots of hacks, there's people who install and then hook up to the Internet and they're being scanned, probed, attempted attacks to them right away too. So there are people out there apparently with a lot of more time on their hands than us.
The one example I would like to refer to is Goebbels' recent, well, not so recent publication of sculpt.c, the Apache exploit for FreeBSD. A few days after that, we saw the first sightings of the scalper worm, which pretty much used his exploit in a pretty trivial way. The worm wasn't written very well. It could have been written a lot better, and I think if it had been written a lot better, it could have caused a lot of problems. I think certainly what we will see in the future is less time between vulnerabilities being discovered and the worm for that vulnerability being seen on the Internet. And obviously with with worms, you don't just have issues of sites being hacked. You have issues with backbone bandwidth being used on backbones and network congestion and other issues.